This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast that takes a look at the week that was in Bates athletics. My name is Aaron Morrison. This week, we're looking back on a strong weekend for the Bates tennis teams and looking ahead to the 2024 head of the Charles Regatta as the Bobcats are sending four boats to Sunday's big event. That's coming up on the Bates Bobcast. The Bates football team hosted Tufts Under the Lights Saturday at Garcelon Field, falling 45-22 to the Jumbos. The score stood tied at 7 through one quarter, but the visitors scored 21 unanswered points in the second quarter to take command of the game. Head coach Matt Coyne breaks down his team's performance.
Well, coach, three quarters of the game, pretty close. Second quarter did not go Bates' way, and that was kind of the difference, I guess, sort of in the end. I mean, what are your major takeaways? Because I feel like it looks like on paper the defense gave a lot of points, but at the same time there weren't like huge plays like in the Colby game or anything. So what were kind of had your evaluation of how they played?
I think, you know, we couldn't establish the line of scrimmage. I think a lot of it was, you know, the run game. You know, Tufts has a really good offensive line and, you know, a good experienced team there. And they were able to just get, you know, 4 to 6 yards on the ground. And, you know, the difference from previous years is it was more 10 to 12 play drives going down rather than a two play drive and a big play, you know? And so that's what we saw last week a little bit on certain drives with Colby, but you know, that's a good football team offensively. Like Berluti, you know, he's the best quarterback, you know, that's been around this league for 4 years, you know, arguably. He manages the game well, and you know, they have good receivers, good line, a good running back. And, you know, our defense fought, they played hard. And there was just certain situations where, you know, we didn't communicate well. We didn't, you know, get aligned properly. That, you know, things that we need to, you know, coach better, but also execute better, because when they're coached, they have to be performed. And yeah, like you said, I think, you know, the resolve was there. The fight was there. I know, but that stretch in the second quarter, coupled with, you know, a couple bad punts, you know, I think special teams plays a role in those short fields. So when we talk about it every Sunday, it's time of possession, turnovers, and special teams. Those are three areas of the game that if you win those three areas, you'll win 95% of your games. And, you know, when you don't do it, it's very hard to win a football game.
Yeah, I was going to say, field position played a huge role, didn't it?
Yeah, and I think it was just, you know, what's crazy is it's just capabilities. You know, we practice those things, and then when you go out there and it's just a lack of execution, you know, we practice those things and, you know, you punt it. And, you know, I know Parker's done much better this year than the previous year. And, you know, he had one bad one there, and then he kicks a 50-yarder. Yeah, you know, it's like, so it's the 60-yarder. His capability is there. And it's not just one individual or one area. It's just holistically as a team, as we continue to grow and gain experience, it's just the consistency and discipline within the scheme over and over again throughout an hour of a football game. That's how you win, you know, and over time, I think, you know, when you do those things the right way and we keep practicing them, keep performing them, keep challenging ourselves, you know, we'll see ourselves on the other side.
Yeah, well, we also saw the opposite of going for it on fourth down, or the opposite of a fake punt, the fake go for it on fourth down. That's worked before with Colton punting it. This time, it looks like Tufts got a hand on it or something.
No, just, you know, Colton shanked it a bit. He shanked it a bit, and it's what we practiced it particularly all week because of the wind and because of the situations with, you know, if we're punting into a strong wind, with the snaps being able to be shot over the head of the punter, and also just, you know, operation and things of that nature. It's like, why not try to get no returner back there and let it roll rather than, you know, punting it into the wind. So practiced it. I mean, I think it was just, you know, we just didn't execute it. And that's just part of the game. You got to execute those things. And, you know, I know he'll do it the next time.
Certainly. And then just in terms of how the offense played, I mean, you guys got some points on the board. You answered Tufts' first score with a score of your own. What do you see from the offense? There were some big plays, looked like they were almost there and just couldn't quite convert.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just, again, it's consistency. And, again, it's first year in the system. We're getting better each week. We're putting up, you know, if we consistently do our job, you see the drives that happen. It's boom, 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 and we're down the field. And it's just, you know, I think we came out and sort of had some mistakes in the first six plays. And it's like the first six plays that we practice all week. And, you know, you got to come out there and, like, we just have little mistakes, you know, that lead to, again, different field positions and not being able to sustain drives. And, you know, the big thing is we have to extend drives. You know, we have to help our defense out offensively by not having three and outs. You know, I think, you know, and we're very capable of that, you know, to be able to extend it. But it was nice to see us, you know, move the ball again. I thought up front physically, like, we matched up very well with them. We were able to run the ball. We were able to protect. We were getting the ball on the edges. You know, we didn't look mismatched at all over there. And we have some guys that made some plays that are some younger guys. You know, Quinn Carver with the big catch down the field. You know, Sergio being Sergio still. But I was still, you know, very impressed with the physicality on the offensive side, blocking and what we did. It's just, if we can clean up the execution, be consistent, it's a tough offense to stop.
Yeah, certainly. And then you're on the road this weekend at Williams, if I'm not mistaken. So take us through what you know about the Eves.
So Williams, you know, Coach Raymond, ton of respect for him. You know, a guy that's mentored me in this profession. They got a really solid football team. You know, offensively, they run the ball. So it's going to be a battle of the line of scrimmages. You know, I think with both offenses, we like to run. You know, they have a big offensive line. They play a lot of 12 personnel. Good quarterback, good running back, you know, solid receivers. They're a good football team. And I think, you know, but so are we. You know, and when we get back to work this week, it's how do we establish a line of scrimmage? How do we physically hold up? And on both sides of the ball, because for us, it says we're going to try to do the same thing to them. You know, it's going to be a back and forth game. And, you know, I think we have to just get back to work. And really, as I say to the team all the time, like, our opponents are nameless and faceless. It's ourselves. So it's like, how do we continue to get ourselves better and improve week by week by week and focus on that rather than what this outcome could be or what happened this year? That stuff doesn't matter. For us, it's about getting to work, practicing, getting better, honing our skills, developing our experience, and continuing to push forward, because, you know, it's clear that we're a much better football team over the past year, and now it's like, how do we continue to compound that?
Does Williams have a scrambling quarterback like Berluti?
So Williams quarterback McHughes, he is a heck of a player, and he's going to only continue to get better. He's a big kid that runs. Yeah, he does scramble around, but he can throw the ball. You know, and I think, you know, for us, it's about just being sound and making those plays difficult. And again, if it comes down to a physical 50-50 ball that we get beat on, then we got beat on it. But it's more, do we not have a gap filled? Do we not have somebody there? It's like, those are things that, you know, that frustrate us and myself as coaches. But the physical, biological mismatches at time that we impose on other teams and they can impose on us, those are the ones you live with as a coach. So, you know, for us, it's about just doing our jobs, understand the scheme, and practicing really hard.
Great. Well, any other thoughts you wanted to share about the Tufts game we haven't gotten to mention yet?
I think the Breast Cancer Awareness Night was great. Mm-hmm. I thought there was a lot of really good support from the students, from the alums, from the fans. And, you know, obviously that's a super important cause, just affects a lot of people. And for us, we were just really fortunate to be able to celebrate that and create more awareness, you know, for that cause and hopefully, you know, raise a little money for it as well. So appreciate everybody, administration, every staff, and you know, the SAC committee that ran it that night for helping us promote that.
All right, Coach. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The women's tennis team competed at the New England Women's Intercollegiate Tennis Tournament over the weekend, and seniors Ava Lyon and Liv Gidlow brought back some hardware. After dropping their first match to a duo from MIT, Lyon and Gidlow emerged victorious in the B-Flight consolation bracket, winning matches against opponents from Endicott and Smith. And Lyon and Gidlow are our female Bobcats of the week.
Ava Lyon and Olivia Gidlow, our co-female Bobcats of the week this week, doubles team for women's tennis, coming back from the New England Intercollegiate Women's Tennis Tournament at Emerson Smith this past weekend. And Ava, let's start with you. You're both seniors. How often have you and Liv played together through the years? And what was it like teaming up this weekend?
Well, we've obviously, in practice, we've tried out doubles together, and I believe like a few tournaments we've played with each other, but I feel like this time we really got a lot of good practice and we just had a good energy going into it. And I think that carried over to the results. So it was really fun.
And Olivia, this tournament was like in multiple campuses. Were you playing at both places or how did that kind of go?
Yeah, we started out playing at the Amherst campus and then the next day we were at Smith. So yeah, it was hard because we were kind of jumping around and the team was a lot of different places, but it worked, and having Ava with me was it was really fun and energetic, so it's good.
Excellent. And Ava, you know, of all the matches you played this past weekend, what's maybe like most memorable moment or memorable match for you, in your opinion?
I'd say our turnaround when we were playing our singles matches against Smith. We both ended up going to third set breakers, and we were playing alongside next to each other. And I think the energy coming from our team cheering us on and then just having each other and playing at this like intense level against these really good players, I think that was just so memorable and will be a lasting experience.
Excellent, Liv. How about for you? Similar or someone different, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I think, like, for me, playing against or next to Ava and both being in these tiebreakers, it was interesting because, like, I had won my first set, lost my second, and Ava's was kind of flipped. So I feel like we both went into the tiebreaker, like, kind of feeling like it was different, but we both had to, like, just kind of grind it out. And it was just so much fun playing next to her. And, like, it was really intense and, like, really fun and exciting energy. So it was good.
And Ava was kind of anticlimactic because you kind of just declared the winners of the consolation bracket, right? Because I guess the other team dropped out in the end. But I mean, what was it like to get a trophy, perhaps? That looked pretty cool.
Always amazing. I mean, once we figured it out, we both ran up to each other and gave like a huge hug. I mean, it was definitely a pleasant surprise, and I think it was a great sort of cap to the weekend, but it was amazing. So
Yeah, Liv, how about for you? What did it feel like to take home a trophy there?
yeah, it was awesome. It was definitely interesting because we had kind of expected to play another match after the one we just finished. But yeah, when they told us that the next team had pulled out, it was fun. Our whole team like kind of got in a big huddle and was just like jumping up and I think it was kind of a win-win situation there.
But was this right after your semifinal match was over? You learned that there was no finals match? Is that what happened?
Yeah, it was right after.
Okay, gotcha. Excellent. And then I guess, you're both seniors now, but take us back when you're looking at colleges. What made Bates the place for you when you were looking at schools in terms of, studying in tennis? Ava, we can start with you.
Yeah, so basically both my parents are Mainers and we lived in Florida for a while, but I knew sort of New England smaller college was definitely what I was looking towards. And sort of talking about Bates with my parents as this is such an amazing place. I toured it and got to meet Coach at some showcases and just really fell in love with sort of the family atmosphere that I got from everybody I talked to on my recruiting journey. So
Great, Liv. How about for you?
yeah, so I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and I know a couple people from here that have gone to Bates, and just I heard just like the most amazing things. I was actually not able to visit ever, so I kind of just like was like okay, like I talked to Coach a little bit, and I just like had this gut feeling that like the people like there were people I wanted to surround myself with, and I just decided to commit and. I've not looked back. It's been great. And yeah, also the team and being able to play tennis at like this high level, but also being able to like do a lot of the academic stuff that I want to do has been really amazing as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess, yeah, no chance to visit probably because of the pandemic at the time, right?
Right. Yeah. A lot of people are pretty shocked that I would just kind of went for it, but I just had a good feeling.
Was going to say,
Yeah.
how did that impact your college search? I mean, it must have been like one like no another, right?
Definitely. Yeah, it was definitely strange. A lot of online visits, but that's totally different. We're doing a lot of like recruiting visits and having a lot of people come stay with us and getting to show them around, which has been really fun because like we didn't get that opportunity. So it's been cool to show other people.
Excellent. So this past weekend, I mean, the format of this tournament was something I'd never really seen before. It was best of three. You played a singles match, and a doubles match. You win two out of three of those. You move on. Ava, what was that format like from your perspective? Have you ever played a tournament like that before?
I have not. And it definitely, I feel like on both of our ends, it was a test of endurance for sure. Because we ultimately got a 5 minute break in between singles going into doubles and then a 20 minute break from our first two matches into playing Smith after sort of going for a while. I mean, we got like a few snacks and sort of used like hydration and sort of did a little mental reset. And I think both of our energies really carried through. Like we were sort of laughing about it in little ways to sort of make up for the busyness there. But I think definitely a grind for sure.
Liv, how about for you? What do you think about the format?
Yeah, I thought the format it made it really fun because it kind of made me and Ava work more as a team instead of just like, all right, let's do doubles and then we're gonna move on to something more like individual. Like it felt like we were still a team during singles, which was really cool. And obviously Ava's like super energetic and it just made it really fun like for me to play next to her and like it when she was there, I noticed I was playing better. So it was really fun.
During singles, you're still like next to each other, basically. So are you kind of keeping half an eye on how she's doing, or how do you maintain your focus though, right?
Yeah, there was one point in our match where like we ended up being on the same side and she's getting a ball and I was like, Ava, like, how are you doing? And she's like, oh. Like we just kind of did a little check-in. So it was fun. It was cool to just feel like connected because, tennis is super individual, but especially singles, and you're out there on your own, but it felt like I had someone in my corner. So it was good.
Great. And we talked with Iris last week on the Bobcast about this, but you have a new coach, of course, Deepak Sharma, who's emphasizing, I think, a lot of conditioning and, making sure the team's in shape, ready to go. Ava, what's it been like having, now a dedicated women's tennis head coach?
I mean, we definitely give huge credit to Coach Gaston Gay, definitely, and we do miss him, but he's done a good job of checking in. But Coach Deepak has really come in with a bunch of really great energy and great scheduling and a lot of dedication. So I think that's definitely showed in how we've all competed and just our practices have just been so cohesive and so positive and so great. And I think we've been so thankful to have him and showing like the results this fall, hopefully will continue to carry on into spring, but I think it's definitely a really good start.
Olivia, how about for you, the experience of having now a dedicated women's tennis head coach here?
It's been really fantastic. I mean, like Ava said, we love Coach Gaston Gay, but it's been nice to just have like one coach dedicated to our team. I think, like you said, he's been super focused on like endurance and consistency and stuff like that. But I think another part has been just the amount of point play, like match play that we've had going on in our practices that like then carries on into our matches. So it feels like we've been like doing it a lot. I think that's why, I mean, for me, I know I felt so much more confident going into doing like the tiebreaker point, like the 10-point tiebreaker, because it was something we'd been doing all season. So yeah, I just think I feel a lot more prepared for match play specifically.
Ava, I think I saw you've had like four different doubles partners this fall alone. Is that right? Or something like that? I don't know. A lot of different doubles partners. How are you kind of building chemistry with everyone you're playing with here?
Oh, well, I think I don't, the closeness of our team definitely helps with sort of switching things around. In our practices, a lot of the time, we'll rotate who we've had for partners. So we're all like trying out different strategies and we're all using the same sort of plays. So I feel like it is a little bit of an adjustment, but because we're all so close, it's not too hard of a switch. But
Yeah, Olivia, how does that work? We have like Iris versus Ava in terms of like their style of play. How do you kind of adjust, when you're switching doubles partners?
yeah, I think it definitely can be hard, like switching back and forth. But like Ava said, personality wise, like we're all really close, but you definitely have to figure out like different strengths of each other's games. Like, so I think the more you play with one person, the more you figure it out. But I think we're all pretty versatile. Like, we're able to kind of work with each other and figure out like what's working for us, what's not. And then kind of just move forward with that. I think we were able to do that this weekend.
Yeah, Ava, any other thoughts you wanted to share about the tournament this past weekend we haven't got to talk about yet?
I don't know. I just think seeing the energy everybody put in across the board was really amazing. And I think this is the closest we've ever been. I know Iris was talking about that in her podcast, but I think genuinely, like from all of us, seniors going down to our freshman Maya, I think we're all getting so close. And I'm excited to just see where it takes us. So.
Liv, how about you? Any other thoughts you wanted to mention we haven't got to talk about?
I think just. I agree that like our team is very deep. Like we all are very high level and I feel like we're all pretty close to each other. And I feel like that's a really big advantage. Having a new coach is also an advantage. And I just feel like there's been a switch. I feel like in our energy and we're all just super excited for the next season.
Excellent. Olivia Goodloe and Ava Lyon, winners of the B-Flight Consolation Bracket there at the New England Intercollegiate Women's Tennis Tournament. Looking forward to the spring season coming up. It'll be here before we know it in February. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Back home at Bates, the men's tennis team hosted the Wallach Invitational, and fifth-year senior Aaron Ramos made a run to the B-Flight Singles semifinals, defeating opponents from Trinity and Colby in his final tournament as a Bobcat. Ramos is graduating in December, and he is our male Bobcat of the week. Well, our male Bobcat of the week, Aaron Ramos, joining us here on the Bobcast, talking some men's tennis. And Aaron, you competed in the Wallach Invitational over the weekend. It was actually, people may not realize this, your final tennis tournament as a Bobcat. So what was it like to get out there? Did you have any sort of senior day stuff or no?
not quite. I celebrated my senior day last semester, sure. But yeah. It was an exciting tournament to go into knowing that, you know, this is, we called it on the team, my last dance. So it was pretty exciting. I've always loved playing at the Wallach. It's probably my favorite tournament. We play a couple in the fall, and by far, you know, playing at home is the best. You get the most support. All your teammates are there. So I really can't complain, and my teammates have been amazing for this, you know, past couple weeks that I've been finishing up with the team.
Great. And yeah, you made a run to the B-Flight singles semifinals, I believe, right? So take us through some of the matches you won and what was working so well for you.
The first match coming out, it was a bit nerve-wracking, you know, knowing this is my last time. So I really wanted to try and perform my best. So it was kind of getting a little bit over those first couple games and nerves that come with that. I'd say my best part of my game was honestly this weekend, my mental strength. And I think that really showed in my second match. I lost the first set 6-0, and that's a really tough place to be at as a tennis player. You know, getting clean swept in the first set is not normally right. Where you want to be. And, you know, having my teammates all around me kept pushing me and realizing, you know, this is my last chance to really do something. So I hunkered down and pulled from within and, you know, was able to make it happen into a third set thriller.
Yeah, I was curious about that, you know, falling behind, you know, losing the first set 6-0 and coming back to win the match. I mean, that doesn't happen very often probably, right?
No, not really often. I mean,
had you ever done that before?
Not in my collegiate career, no. Actually, I don't think I've ever done that even in my junior career.
Yeah.
That might have been my first match that I've been able to come back from such a deficit.
What changed, you think?
I felt very at ease throughout this whole tournament. Normally when I go into tournaments, it's very nerve-wracking for me because I always have this sort of pressure to perform. And I think that, you know, once I had lost that first set, it was very much so I have nothing else to lose, so might as well put my best foot forward and, you know, put everything I can, all my frustrations, all my happiness and excitement into my footwork and my movement. And that really started to translate well into my game, which helped me play better. And eventually I was able to finally catch up to him and catch a break towards the end of the second set, which I ended up losing that break, but then ended up winning it in the tiebreaker. So that was super exciting. And, you know, obviously my teammates being on the sidelines cheering was a massive help. Tennis is such an individual sport that when you are able to finally see it as a team sport, it completely changes the way you play the game. You know, you realize you're fighting for something more than just yourself.
Excellent. And then take us back. I mean, growing up, you're from New Jersey. When did you first really get into the sport of tennis? What really got you started playing?
Honestly, I played a lot of sports. I joined tennis very late.
Okay.
For most, I would say, competitive tennis players. A lot of the times in tennis, you start very young, 6-8 years old. I started when I was 13, 14, starting to take it seriously. So entering high school is when I really started to take tennis seriously. And I just fell in love with the game. I had done a ton of other sports, soccer, mixed martial arts. That was my main sport before tennis up until I was about 16. And then I fully made the transition to fully committing to tennis. I liked the sport a lot more. And I guess it just watching tennis growing up, I was constantly surrounded by, you know, tennis players. And I just loved the game.
I gotta ask you about mixed martial arts, though. How did that start?
That one, everybody loves to ask about that. It's not super common to find a mixed martial artist turned tennis player.
Right,
but,
right.
My dad always wanted me and my sister and himself to be able to protect themselves. So at 3 years old, he entered me into MMA classes, and I stuck through it all the way until I was about 16. And that's pretty much the main gist of why I was an MMA fighter. I did competitions in MMA, and I did pretty well in that. But I just knew ultimately I didn't want to be a fighter. That was not for me.
Gotcha. Yeah. Mixed martial arts and then tennis. That is a combination that I don't know anyone else has done. Perhaps
I will say they do have some connections.
Okay.
Mainly on the mental side of things. You know. Mixed martial arts is, you have to be very mentally tough.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you're getting pummeled all the time. And tennis is, you have to be very mentally tough in the sense that each point is a constant flux in, you know, positives and negatives. You know, you might be able to have won 3 straight points in tennis and you're riding a high, but then the momentum shifts and now you've lost an entire game in 4 straight points. And those little mental check-ins and check-outs are really important. And then MMA also translates well to tennis in terms of body IQ. You learn how to move your body extremely well. And I think that correlated a lot to me picking up tennis very quickly.
Outstanding. So what led you to Bates then coming up from New Jersey?
So I met Coach. I actually had never heard of Bates prior.
Sure.
Prior to talking to Coach and Coach Gasnier, that is. And I met him at a Lehigh recruitment camp. And that year, I think it was, I want to say 2017, 2018, around then. My original class year, we picked up 5 people from that recruitment camp, and I had gotten talking to Coach. I loved his coaching style. I loved his energy, his mentality about the sport, and once I got to understanding, you know, not just that he was a good fit for me, but that the school was also a good fit for me, I knew that this was the place that I wanted to be, and I immediately, I think I did ED1, I think, yeah. So.
And you stuck with it because I know you went through the pandemic. I mean, I know you've had some injuries. I mean, how many things that you learned through this experience? I know it hasn't been maybe necessarily the smoothest ride for a variety of reasons, right?
The pandemic is such an interesting thing because I miss my original class year, obviously. I miss, you know, growing with those guys, coming in with those guys. But the pandemic allowed me to grow a lot. I ended up working during the pandemic. I played tennis a ton. And I fell through a kind of a rough period. At one point after the pandemic, you know, I was kind of burnt from tennis. I played every single day, trying to get better so that when I came back on the team, I could play at a higher position. Injuries started to pile up, and then some losses got to me, and it took me a while to fully recover from it. I would say it wasn't until about the end of my second semester junior year, beginning of my first semester senior year, that I really was looking forward to playing tennis again. And then, of course, my hamstring injury last semester really took me out for the rest of it. And so coming into this last fall, I had one main objective, which was to stay healthy, because I knew that this was it. This was my last opportunity to play collegiate tennis, and I wanted to be able to give it my best. And I fortunately was able to give a pretty good show on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when you talked to Coach Gasnier after the match, I mean, what did he talk to you about?
Honestly, we didn't talk much because if we started talking to each other, we would have started crying at each other. So we were after the huddle on Sunday. I mean, he and I were both on the verge of tears. I myself had a very emotional walk back to my dorm. It was rough. It was exciting. I was happy that, you know, I'd made it through. I persevered, and that I had put up the performance that I did. But it was incredibly sad that I knew that I was never going to get that again. And that sort of experience again, which kind of got to me.
Did you hear from some of your fellow seniors from last spring?
I did. Yeah. And from my original class year also that came up. So from guys from 2 years ago and last year, both came up. Mm. And it was amazing to have them support me for this last ride. I couldn't have asked for a better way to go out, honestly, having everybody around me that I really cared about. So
excellent. Well, you're going to graduate in December, right?
I am going to graduate in December.
Excellent. And your economics and mathematics double major. Is that something you came in knowing you wanted to do?
I wanted to be a finance major, actually.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, well, Bates doesn't offer a finance
major. Technically, you're right. You can't do that.
So what am I going to do? I want to play tennis here, and I want to come to Bates, but they don't offer the major that I want. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I guess the best decision for me is to just kind of combine the essence of what a finance major would be. And I came out with, obviously, econ and then math. They pair well together. Yeah. So it was ultimately a good choice. The math major definitely pops a lot when people ask me, like, oh, you're a math major. Okay.
Excellent, excellent. And then, I mean, I got to ask you post-college plans because, I mean, you're graduating in a few months. I got to ask you.
I currently, what you would consider next semester, so from January to approximately May, I'll be traveling for the most part.
Nice.
Okay. I plan to go to the Dominican Republic. And then I also plan to go to Asia for a little while. I wanted to go travel Asia for a long time. That's
a bunch of different countries in Asia.
Primarily Japan. But I do want to visit like South Korea, Singapore. I haven't been there before, and I've been all over the world.
Okay.
And so this has been a bucket list thing of mine, and I'm so excited to go, and I can't wait.
I've been to Japan twice myself.
Oh, really?
It was a long time ago. I'm 36. I went in high school and also once in middle school, so it was a while ago. But I love Japan, so you should
I've heard great things, and I mean, I'm always, like, watching up on it. I love the culture. The food is amazing, so I'm just so excited to go.
Excellent. So that'll be a good thing post-college there.
Exactly,
yeah. No, you touched on Coach Gassingay, what do you learn from him through the years? Because you've been through so much, as you mentioned before.
Yeah, Coach's style of instructing tennis is very different from what I was used to in high school. In high school and my junior tennis career, my coach was very technical and very, you know, put your foot this position, move the racket this way.
Yeah.
Coach is very much more so, you know, feel it, see it, do it. Mm. And he's more so, you know, trust in the training you've already had, because you have good strokes, you have the footwork, it's all there. It's mainly about your mental state, which is primarily what he preaches, which I didn't really get accustomed to until much later in my career, where I realized, you know what, I understand now what he's trying to tell me. And that is, you know, mental toughness. It doesn't matter that your forehand maybe isn't as good as it was yesterday, or that your serve isn't working perfectly. You have to be able to find ways to win your matches and with what you have that day. And so I finally learned that towards the later end of my career. And I always preach that to our current freshmen, you know, they're always coming out of practice like, oh my, you know, my backhand, I couldn't do anything. And I'm like, then slice or just do something else, run around it. You know, you have to find a way, because when you're in a match and your backhand's not working, that's not going to be a good excuse.
Excellent. And what are your thoughts you want to mention about the Wallach Invitational, or about your time as a Bobcat in general, we haven't got to talk about yet?
Yeah, actually, there's this one. I have this one memory from my freshman year that was always probably one of my biggest dreams, and why Wallach was one of my favorite tournaments. Was that my senior captain that year, Jacob Eisenberg? He had this absolutely electric match at night to make it and beat out some Tufts kid in a third set thriller. And I remember standing there, and once he won, everybody charged the courts and was cheering him and was super happy. And I was like, wow, that's a memory that I'll have with me forever. It really impacted me, and I was like, I want to be able to do that one day. And it turned out that Saturday was that opportunity. And I remember my former teammate from 2 years ago, he came up for Wallach this weekend, and I had told him about this, and he was like, well, you finally accomplished your dream of leaving an impact on your freshmen that they'll never forget. And so hopefully they'll take that with them for their next 4 years, as I took that win from my senior.
Excellent. And who was the teammate who told you that, the former?
Liam Dunn.
Oh, Liam Dunn. Oh, Liam he was Dunn. Up here. Okay.
Yeah, he came up. I think it was Nick Forrester came. Liam Dunn, Leo Comferman, Teddy Coyde, Alex Gujarathi, Nikki Desai, and a few of the women's players as well.
Oh, nice.
Laura Littlefield came from class of
23.
I think that's all. Hopefully I'm not forgetting anybody.
Well,
a
lot of alumni support is the point.
Excellent.
All right. Well, Aaron Ramos, our male Bobcat of the week. Congrats on kind of bookending your Bates career there at Wallach with a really strong performance. And thanks for joining us on the Bobcast. And looking forward to seeing what you do here in the future. I'm sure we'll see you back to support some Bobcats in the future too, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I can't wait to be back for Wallach next year to support the team.
All right, Aaron Ramos, male Bobcat of the week. Thanks again.
Thank you.
The rowing teams head to Boston this Sunday for the head of the Charles Regatta, a massive event featuring crews from all over the world. Head coach Peter Steenstra gives us a preview.
Well, coach, head to Charles this Sunday for the rowing team. The women are sending three boats, a couple eights, a four, and the men with the varsity eight going there as well. So four boats total for the rowing program. And one thing that stands out looking at the roster, who's going to be in each boat, for the women's, the first and second varsity eight. Both the coxswains are first years, and this head of Charles is like very much a coxswain oriented race with all the steering and everything. So what kind of experience do these two have? Have they been on the Charles before? What's their kind of background?
Hannah Herbst is driving the 1V with Leah Brody driving the 2V, and then Sarah Wallace is running that 4 down the course. Don't be fooled by Hannah Herbst. She is in her, this is either her 7th or 8th year coxing. So she's probably more a veteran than almost anyone on the team, to be honest. She's got a lot of miles under her. She's driven the boat for quite a while. Very good, very smart, humble, which is nice, but still extremely competitive person. So she's a perfect fit for that 1V, and she's really taken to that role pretty quickly. But yeah, she's been down the course a couple times, so it's nice to have someone that has that kind of experience going into it. Brody is in her, I think this would be her second year of coxing, but she's doing great. You know, she's very quickly picking it up, and she and, we call her Herbie, but so Brody and Herbie are doing a really good job together as like a coxing duo. Exactly the thing we need for a V16 to be competitive at the top. And Wallace is, she was a walk-on last year. We had a lot of good coxswains, so she didn't get a ton of driving, but she was in and out of the boat, and there were various boats, and I think she's ready to take this 4 down the course, and I think she's excited about it. She's kind of a quiet person in general, which might be a good mix for that that group there, a bunch of freshmen in there, but I think that she's anxiously awaiting the starting line. She's pretty excited about it.
Terrific. And then on the men's side, I recognize both of those names in the varsity eight. A lot of people returning from last year, a lot of people moving up though, also looks like from the 2V.
Yeah, it's a good group. Yeah, we graduated a good class last year, so these guys have stepped right into that role pretty easily. I think you know, it's a good motivated bunch. I want to give some credit to the captains. When you look at Sean Christensen and Ian Van Loo and Ben Auerbach, you know, they did a really good job spending some time communicating with the team over the summer. They are following in line with a group of good captains from last year who helped kind of set the tone. And we've had two consecutive good classes come in. So, you know, this year's first year class is a big one, and it's a big one with a big personality. They're a bunch of guys that like to work hard, they like to race, and they're showing up ready to go. So none of them made it into the first boat, but they were very, very competitive, so that there's you know, it's a very freshman sophomore heavy JV eight that's that's nipping at the heels of this 1V on a daily basis. So it's a lot of fun.
Certainly. And then I think, we, you know, at the end of last year, we sort of talked about how your expectations in terms of the level of training, there's like, I'm raising them for this group. What are your thoughts on how they've responded so far?
No, they definitely have responded. Yeah. You know, they came into this much more prepared than ever before. The number of injuries are, I mean, they're still there a little bit on the women's side, kind of, but they're not like ending. They're not season-ending injuries. Yeah. So there's smaller things that people are dealing with. The guys came in ready to rumble, and we've got a couple little lingering things. But with a roster that's nearing or right around the 100 mark, you know, it's a very, very good large operation. And, you know, our first ever, I believe, our first ever men's 5 or 5V, we call it, 5th varsity 8, yeah, was on the water a couple weeks ago. Okay. So we actually have 5/8 worth of men. And that doesn't include the guys that are abroad who are going to come back. So it's a very, very big, deep program right now.
Great. And then on the women's side, you know, the 1V has a lot of returners from last year, for almost the whole boat, right?
Just about. Yeah. You know, Keller, I'd have to look back. But, yeah, Festaya is in the bow seat there.
Yeah.
But Keller was not in the boat from last year. So we've got a couple people, Comrac as well, sort of stepping into this role and excited about it. You know, that the women's group has had a very significant mental shift. Again, credit to the captains, you know, Burdick and Kemp, and Eaton. You know, Eaton's over there, stroke seat of the 2V.
Yep.
So there's a lot of maturity within the group. But those three captains, or clearly also set a tone over the summer and said that, you know, we're gonna take we're gonna take our lumps from last year, and it's time to get back to work, and the path back up the mountain begins here in the fall season, and we need to have a great showing at the Charles, but having 2-8s and a 4 in there that do well and qualify again for the following years is the goal.
And what does it take to qualify and return each year, kind
of? They got to finish top half of that event. Yeah. You know, so when they when our second 8 is in the same event as the 1V, yeah, right? They're one of, I think it's 6 or 7 JV8s that mm-hmm. are in that event. So to finish in the top half is a good sign. You know, that means that the program's going well.
Yeah, and how much of a measuring stick do you see the Charles as? Is it much predictive of the spring, or is it not really?
I mean, I think it is. Yeah. You know, when we have enough depth on the team to send 2-8s into that race that are going to finish in the top half, then that says you have the right level of competition within the boathouse. As far as like first or second or third, I wouldn't say that that guarantees medal performances come springtime. But if you have an 8 that's finishing in the top 6 or 7, then you know that you have a boat that's competitive, at least at this point. And then we bring back our people from abroad, and hopefully we're just getting better from there.
How many are you missing abroad right now?
There's a handful. Yeah, you know, not a whole lot, but okay, a handful of people that are going to have an impact in the middle of the program. That's for sure.
Great. And then you know, the Charles in general, if people are saying, "Oh, I want to go check it out this year," never been before, what can they expect to see?
That have never been to the Charles before?
Yeah, they've never been to the head of Charles before. It would be an overwhelming experience.
It can be, but yeah, there's a lot of the hardest part is parking. Yeah, quite honestly. So either have good shoes for walking, or get yourself a scooter that you can cart around on. But yeah, it's in terms of the world of rowing, it's just such a big event over a big area. So it is out of the ordinary for a lot of reasons. That's why it's called the Festival of Rowing, right? So it marks the end of the overall season for a lot of programs, and it's quite the display. You have every manufacturer of every product involved in rowing is there. Tents galore that go on for quite a distance, and then the big event, of course, is the Reunion Village. The alumni tent will be down there. So our advancement team has got a nice tent for us, and so I'll be making an appearance this year, which I'm excited to do. And I know that we've had close to 100 people have registered, you know, that they're going to attend. We have an alumni 8 that's racing on the women's side, okay, so they're going to be there racing on Saturday. And yeah, it's just going to be the same big event. Looks like the weather's going to be good. So whenever the weather's good, you can count on there being close to 500,000 people there.
Yeah. Has Bates had an alumni 8 before?
Oh, yeah. Almost every year.
Almost every year. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The men's 8 is the one that kind of comes and goes. Okay. The women have been fairly consistent over the last 8 or 10 years.
Who's coaching that boat?
I believe the world-famous Hannah DeBruin.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But we have some folks coming back there. Yeah. You know, we have, I know Grace Bake is flying in from England. And I do know that Jenna Armstrong, the truly world famous right. Jenna Armstrong, 2-time boat winner of the boat race. She's racing in a double against Elizabeth Sunshine.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she and Sunshine are racing against each other, which is just fun to have. But yeah, it's fun to get everyone together. That's really what this thing ends up being. Is sure, we're racing and we're going to take that seriously, but there's also a day of like family reunion that's really going on.
Great. Well, any other thoughts you want to share about how this team is shaping up so far in the fall and this big regatta on Sunday and before we head into the winter here shortly?
I'm actually very happy with all the work that's happened so far. I want to really give, again, credit to the captains for the communication they did over the summer and starting the fall season. I also want to give credit to these first years that have come in mm-hmm. on both sides of the boathouse, just ready to go. And on top of that, having such a great positive attitude and positive energy about them. So it's been such a wonderful group that we've had. So the injection of all this energy is really propelling the program in the right direction. So I think that come springtime, we're gonna kind of reestablish ourselves, and I'm looking forward to that.
Great. Peter Steenstra, head coach of our rowing program, head of the Charles this Sunday. 2:09 p.m. is when the men's first varsity eight is off and running, and we'll have the women's first varsity and second varsity eight in the same race, collegiate eights, and then varsity four after that. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
While it was a tough week for the field hockey, soccer, and volleyball teams, the Bobcats get a chance to bounce back this weekend as volleyball hosts Bowdoin and Colby on Friday and Saturday, respectively, and the rest of the Bobcats are on the road this Saturday to take on Connecticut College. Find the complete schedule online at gobatesbobcats.com, and we'll catch you next time on the Bates Bobcast.